So what a pleasure it is to be back in the Sangam. I've just been kind of reveling in the notes that you all have been sending, in the sharing, and also in the feeling that I think we all have, that it's really so great to be in this conversation. It almost doesn't matter what we're talking about. The mere fact of getting to have this conversation about reality at this level is just such a deep pleasure. So, again, welcome to the second week of Practicing Enlightenment. I've been giving versions of this particular sangam, satsang, for years. When I first began doing it, I called it Practical Enlightenment. And then I kind of made a joke about it, and I began to call it Practically Enlightened, because that was the experience of so many of us as we contemplated these truths. We realized, oh my God, I'm practically enlightened. And one of the things I began to see, in fact, it's been, the fundamental understanding of my practice for years, which I learned from Swami Muktananda, who was a deeply enlightened non-dual teacher, who held very, very, very easily a lot of ideas which seem paradoxical. So he was able to completely rest in the formless and to tell us that the self, the essence, what you really are, is impossible to attain because you are already that. And then he would tell you, and you need to practice. He would say things like, just hearing about it is like reading a cookbook or trying to eat the food in a painting. You really have to practice to experience it. And over the years, I started out, as many people do, believing in my heart that spiritual progress, the state of liberation, self-realization, enlightenment, whatever we want to call it, spiritual maturity, being fully cooked as a practitioner, that this was something that I would attain only after years of practice. And, you know, in one sense, of course, it's true. As my teacher used to say, instantaneous attainment fades away instantaneously. At least it often did for me. And at the same time, and I think this is true for many of you as well, the deeper truth is that when we are in our enlightened self, which happens more and more as we allow ourselves to recognize ourselves as that pure consciousness, that pure awareness, that, you know, big mind, big heart. So often we elide over that which is most deeply us, sort of rocketing forward into the concerns of our life, sort of like, as one of the great beings said, it's like walking on the earth, stepping on the grass, and then wondering, where's my ground? You know, in other words, we're walking on it. We're walking on the earth all the time, and yet so often we're not aware that we're being held by the earth. And of course, in the same way, we are resting in the pure awareing, the blissfulness, the non-egoic I that is our deepest ground. And so much of the time, we just don't recognize it, or we forget to turn to it. So one of the reasons that I asked us, and I did it myself, to do this contemplation on deeper awakening, what's wanting to wake up in you now, how are you facilitating that, and noticing what ways we, all of us, hold back from our enlightened self. The purpose was really to let ourselves remember to self-recognize, to easily self-recognize our own infinity and the fact that it's always presenting itself. The self is always presenting itself as us, moment by moment, in any moment that we're willing to turn to it, let go of whatever it is that we're holding on to, whatever old historical views about ourselves we've fallen into. And sometimes immediately, sometimes little by little, we become aware, oh my God, I'm that. There's a story that I really, really love that I heard 30 years ago, and it's a story about a guy in a dark room working on his computer, eating Fritos, and he happened to have a next door neighbor who was a sage. So every day or so, the sage would come in and say, how are you doing? What's going on? How's your program? And then he would say, you know, it's a beautiful sunny day. You're living in Carmel Valley, California, where the sun shines most of the time. Why don't you go outside and catch some rays? You know, let the vitamin D penetrate your milky white computer nerd skin. And the guy would say, no, I'm too busy. I don't have time tomorrow. And then one day the sage flung open the door and shouted, fire, fire, fire. And the man jumped up, grabbed his laptop, and ran out the door into the sunshine. And the sage was standing there. He pointed upward and he said, sky. And in that moment, the story goes, you know, the man's consciousness has expanded, as it does when we step out of our dark room and look at the sky. And of course, the irony of the story, the parable factor in the story, is that he was so engrossed in his daily activities that it required somebody shouting fire to actually get him out. So in that sense, you know, we're all living in that enormous opportunity. The sage has shouted fire. That is, the world is demonstrating that in many ways it's on fire. And in that moment, we have the opportunity to look at the sky, to look at the self, to stop noticing how rough the waves are, or enjoying the peacefulness of the wavelessness, which happens, of course, to us as well, and recognize that it's all happening in the ocean. So this week, my dear ones, we're going to go a little deeper into our meditation on awareness, and we'll also talk about some of the qualities of essence, of the underlying awareness, some of the qualities that begin to naturally emerge as our understanding shifts, and also the qualities that we access when we meditate and contemplate. And we'll begin, as we always do, by settling ourselves into a meditative posture. You can have your papers with you. Notice how your body feels against the floor or the chair. Notice if you're allowing the seat to hold you up, allowing yourself to take the support of the seat. And with an inhalation, let your hips and thighs and buttocks settle more deeply into the seat. And remember that when you sit in a meditative posture, it's very important not to rest on your coccyx, because that actually is not so great for the back. So you want to sit a little forward. Make sure that your weight is on the buttocks, on the thighs, on the sit bones. And, of course, this is also, to do this requires that you not slump in your lower back, that you're not round in your lower back. So if it's hard for you to sit upright without support, you're going to stuff cushions or pillows between your back and the wall, so that, or your back and the back of the chair, right there at the base of your lumbar spine, so that your body will be supported in its upright posture. And as you inhale, you feel the bottom of the posture grounding. And as you exhale, you allow the breath to lift your torso up through the crown of the head. Inhaling, let the chest lift and open. Exhaling, let the shoulder blades come onto the back. And as you sit, as we begin the chant, consider that the chant we're about to sing is a calling. It's really a prayer, and we're asking the Supreme Guru, the great enlightening force of the universe, we're asking reality herself to lead us from untruth to truth, from the idea that everything is separate and difficult to the recognition that there's just one reality here, from ignorance to understanding, from darkness to light, from the feeling of being shut in and small and locked in that dark room to the recognition of the great sky that we're a part of, and from death, from the death that occurs every moment that we take ourselves out of the recognition that this universe is pervaded with love, to immortality, to nectar, which is, of course, the nectar that we experience when we know the self. So we'll chant that for a few minutes. Then we'll come into meditation and we'll practice a very simple but very deep way of tuning into our own essence, ourself, the spaciousness at the heart of everything. Through the power of our practice, we ask that all beings experience happiness and the causes of happiness. We ask that all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. We ask that all beings, including ourselves, experience the sacred joy that lies behind suffering, beyond suffering. We ask that we know equanimity, free of grasping, hatred, and dullness. And we ask that we know the oneness of all that lives. And as your awareness flows with the breath, flowing out with the understanding that you're being breathed by the air that surrounds you like a blanket of nourishment. That reality herself, whose nature is love, is breathing you. And as you let yourself settle into the sense of the breath nourishing you through the particles of air, from time to time, remind yourself, I am. And when these words, I am being the mantra of the self, the great self, the self who is the nourishing love at the heart of everything. As these words, I am, sound inside your mind, pay attention to the space that's left in the mind at the end of I am. The breath flows in and out with the sense that it's flowing naturally, that you're being breathed. And as the thought, I am, the thought, I am without an object, the pure awareness, I am, arises in your mind, you begin to rest in the space that I am leaves at the end of the repetition. I am. Let yourself plunge into that space that the pure awareness of I am opens up inside your consciousness. Not trying to hold the space, not trying to stay there any longer than it is natural. And then allow the thought I am to arise and feel your way into the space at the end of these two magical mantric words, I am. Feel the space. Notice the space. Be that. in this space that we touch at the end of I Am, we touch the space of essence. And in that space, it's possible to understand in a deep way these words from the Ashtavakra Gita. You're free of all limitations, independent, calm, without dimension or form, imperturbable. Your nature is unimaginable intelligence. Know yourself to be pure consciousness. From your true nature, everything is born. In you, everything is supported. Into you, everything is again dissolved. You are this vastness, one without a second. Your true nature is unconceivable power. You see all without eyes. You hear all without ears. Nothing exists outside you. And in that knowing, as even for a fraction of a second, we tune ourselves into that space at the end of I Am, which is the meditative space, which is, for many of us, the doorway into consciousness itself, and which is also the experience of consciousness itself, because there, within your mind, as your mind, that vastness that we call the Tao or the Self or the Truth is fully, totally present. And of course, this is the paradox. It's so easy, so accessible, and we need so much help. So today we'll go a little deeper into our meditations on awareness. And then I'd like to look at some of the naturally enlightened qualities of essence, that is, the qualities that we begin to experience as our own when we're tuned into that awareness space. We said last week, and it's one of the truths about the experience we call awakening or enlightenment that I've found most useful in my own life, my own practice, that there are really two aspects of enlightened consciousness, and some traditions focus on one and others on the other, but in fact, if you get past the language and the different types of experience, you realize that what they're really talking about is the two facets of reality, awareness and love, or freedom and fullness. So the enlightenment of freedom is the recognition of that which is in no way limited by the thoughts in the mind. It's the capacity for living your life with the constant recognition that whatever you think about things, whatever concepts you have, whatever is going on around you doesn't touch that presence, which is what you are. You're liberated in that sense. Your mind is clear, calm, humorous, and light. And the enlightenment of fullness is, first of all, an experience of a kind of passionate lovingness, an attunement to the Shakti aspect of reality, to the dynamic playfulness of reality, which often will allow you to be, in fact, completely engaged in activity with full emotional range, and in that activity, in that sense of everything being possible, you actually find yourself expressing the qualities of essence, the unbroken love, the truth, the strength, the will, which are the qualities of our being, of our source. And, you know, for the purposes of distinction in something that actually has no distinction, these two styles of enlightenment are sometimes called liberation and self-realization, and the words are used interchangeably. But it's also true that different traditions define enlightenment slightly differently, and these slight differences have provoked fierce debates over time. Debates which I've kind of been in the middle of for some reason, and which I've had many friends who've been in the middle of. So, for example, people I know who practiced in Buddhist traditions or direct path traditions, in which the view that's held is that enlightenment is total freedom from the constrictions of the mind. Enlightenment is the ability to rest in open awareness. They look at their experience somewhat differently than people who've been trained in more devotional traditions. So where there's an understanding often that enlightenment or liberation or the goal is to merge into God, to become one with a divine being. And, you know, it's this very strange, or let's say, to cook in devotional love so that it kind of pickles you and gives you really the experience that what you are is not different from the divine. So people who are trained in one tradition and whose actual personal experience is different than the way experience is described in their tradition, often get confused and are sometimes kind of regarded as heretics. And of course, we're talking about Eastern traditions, which are at least theoretically quite forgiving, but nonetheless, it can be uncomfortable to be practicing in a particular sangham and feel that your experience is not quite understood or valued, or at least not talked about among your peers in the tradition. For example, I'll give you two examples. One, an old friend who was a student of my guru during the days when my guru had written a very beautiful book about his own experiences on the journey, revealing very esoteric, beautiful visions that are not much talked about. He was really a master of the tradition of spontaneous kundalini awakening and the meditations that arise from it. And although he never said this, he never told people that you were supposed to have these experiences, the tendency among his students was to believe that your spiritual experience wasn't really good enough if you weren't seeing things and hearing things and going into states of bliss. And this particular friend of mine had a meditation that was very, very much about kind of resting back in pure awareness. Nothing would happen. There would be no particular feeling. It was a kind of a sense of neutrality. And she always felt that she wasn't, really, let's say, spiritually correct. Until after my guru passed away, she began practicing in a Buddhist tradition where they actually explain meditation as, very often, like all traditions, it's more than that. But they think of meditation as being that state of equanimity and peacefulness, and they actually don't approve of visions and lights. So she was much more comfortable when she understood that, that her experience was actually described very vividly in another tradition. And I've known many, many people, especially among my current group of students, who practiced for years in Buddhist traditions and never had a, never felt comfortable about they were having a much more Shakti-filled dynamic meditation that was really discussed in their tradition. So it's I've just, my own experience in my own life and in the lives of others I've known is that it's so tremendously important to understand that spiritual experience has many different facets and that there are many different doorways into the self, which we experience sometimes according to our nature and personal karmas, and sometimes, especially for long-term walkers of the path, will experience different facets of enlightenment, or as the great contemporary teacher A.H. Alma says, facets of unity, at different times along the way. So one of the reasons that I really love Kashmir Shaivism as a tradition and the sages of that tradition, such as Abhinavagupta, is that they really got and taught this both-and approach to enlightenment, to the experience of the inner world. You know, their teaching is that reality is both awareness and bliss. It's both still and dynamic. It's Shiva and Shakti, and it's control and freedom. So when we deeply understand that, it actually allows us to not only metabolize our experience and understand it, but also to recognize one of the gifts of Shaivism, which is that, as I said earlier, there are several doorways that for each one of us are powerful at different times, and very often what's needed at a particular moment in our practice is for us to walk through a different doorway into the inner world and experience a different facet of our enlightened self, so that eventually the diamond, the crystal of our natural awareness, our natural state of awake consciousness, really can start to reveal itself more and more fully. So one of the things that Shaivism has taught me, this is intrinsic in the way that tradition looks at practice, is that though there are many stages on the journey, there are essentially two that are significant. And the first is that you practice to recognize that your own essence, your own pure consciousness, without thoughts, memories, ideas, emotions, attention, or intention, is the core of you. You practice recognizing the difference between the you that you thought you were, the you that's composed of conditioning and ideas and thoughts, the you that you begin to recognize, the you that is beyond the ordinary I, the non-egoic I. And in this, you begin to see that everything in your experience, everything that you see, think, feel, touch, hear, is actually arising and subsiding inside this awareness, which is taking in the whole field of your experience. And at a certain point, or at perhaps right in the beginning, and perhaps later on, or perhaps over and over again, you actually start to pull back and to realize that what you are is that underlying presence that receives whatever is going on in the mind and heart, that underlying presence which is not only present to experience, not only the ground of experience, but is also the one who knows experience. And what I'm doing in this moment, as many of you know, is pointing something out, pointing out that the ground of you, the awareing that is you, is always present, always knowing what you're experiencing, doing, even including if you're spaced out or asleep, it's present knowing that. And that if you take that backward step, you actually begin to have a subtle recognition that that what you see in front of you is actually being held in awareness, that the room you're in is inside your awareness. In fact, arising in awareness, your perception of it is arising in awareness. And you start to see that that open spaciousness is both the experiencer and the knower of the experience, and that it is actually empty of all the conceptual understanding you have about who you are and who I am and what is going on in the room and all the concepts, all the ideas, all the human values, all the ideas of good and bad and right and wrong and happy and sad, that what you are is none of that, but is actually free of that and holding it. And that first stage of separating yourself from your sense of, let's say, empirical I-ness, it's the first step, and it's called in Sanskrit atma-vyapti, which literally means the pervasion of self, that is, not the ego self, but the deep I self. And the second stage, which is a very advanced stage of enlightenment, is the experience that that pervading self is utterly, completely, clearly revealed to be God itself, the Tao itself, the source itself. You know, Shaivism is a deistic tradition, so there's a very devotional aspect to it. Reality is called many things. It's called the heart. It's called that which is the ultimate, the absolute, without form. But it's also called Shiva, and Shiva is not simply formless consciousness. Shiva is also a very personal being to the devotees of that tradition. So it's a tradition in which however you approach reality is seen as completely fine, because the highest reality is both utterly empty and utterly full, both utterly impersonal and also completely capable of taking personal forms, not only the forms of you and me and our friends and relatives and children and pets, not only the form of the earth, but also the form of deities. The Buddhist tradition tends to be, at least most Buddhist traditions tend to kind of ignore the form and focus on the space which holds the form, on the awareing itself. But what we're always being asked to recognize is that reality is not different from that consciousness, that source, the Tao, the All, the Supreme Presence. And to recognize that what you and I have taken to be our own experiencing self is not actually ours, but is a limited expression of that great experiencing self, which is constantly evolving as reality. What we are is an expression of that self, which is constantly evolving as reality. And we're going to speak a little bit about what that means in terms of understanding how reality works. And I'm going to ask you this week, and again, I'm practicing along with you, so it's also going to be my practice, to begin to hold the view this week that reality is acting through you, as you, in you, as well as around you, and to begin to practice with this feeling of non-separation from the world. And this recognition of non-separation is called in Buddhism the view, and my guru used to call it right understanding. In Hindi, Tikh Samaj, for those of you who speak Hindi. In other words, and what my teacher would say, he would say that to make progress in sadhana and spiritual practice, to know the self, two things are needed. One is meditation practice and other practices of that kind, but also equally having the right understanding about reality. Because if you don't understand what reality is, then all of your experiences of awakening get metabolized in the context of your separative, your sense of separate I-ness. And so what that means is that, like all of us, you know, when reality unfolds itself as in its vastness, we get scared. We think that we're, you know, we're coming apart or that something bad will happen. Or we get inflated and we think, oh my God, I'm the only person in the world this ever happened to. Like my friend who had a big awakening in which he realized that the consciousness in Christ was the same as his and had to really control himself to stop acting out of a Jesus complex. So the view is really important. The view is what saves us from fear and what saves us from inflation. So, to reiterate, the I is not the ego I. The I is pure seeing, pure awareness, which in the Soto Zen tradition they call big mind, which in Shaivism we call the heart. And Ramana Maharshi says, the beloved heart alone is the refuge for the rising and subsiding of the sense of I. Heart, the source, is the beginning, the middle, and the end of all. Heart, the supreme space, is never a form. It is the light of truth. So the heart, like the mind is not just that energy in us that's thinking all the time. The mind is also the vastness that has become all this. And when we recognize that, then the thoughts come and go, and they're not such a big deal. In the same way, the heart is not simply the emotional, that processor of emotions, and it's not even the center in the chest that we call the Anahata Chakra. The heart is spaciousness itself, but spaciousness with the flavor of love. So, what I hope you're realizing and getting is that there is that in you which, when these words are said, when the sages say these words, your enlightened self recognizes that they're true. And if you're ever wondering where your enlightened self is, one way to identify her or him, although, of course, at that level there's no her or him, one way to identify your enlightened self is to notice that in you which recognizes truth, which recognizes that when the Yoga Vasishtha says, infinite is the infinite, beginningless and endless, which exists as the pure experience and consciousness. When you hear that, your enlightened self knows that it's the truth. So, let's just go back into our beautiful meditation posture. Allow the breath to flow with the recognition that we're being breathed by the universe herself. Allow the body to easily come into an upright and aligned position. And allow the thought, I am, to be present in your consciousness as a pointer to that space that exists at the end of I am. This mantra, I am with no object, is the voice of the self, of the great self, reminding you of what you are. So have the feeling that the words I am are being spoken from the deepest part of you, from the self in you, from that beingness that is not conditioned by your happiness or sadness or your family history or your mood or your ideas, but is pure presence, pure awareness, pure blissfulness, pure I am-ness. And then allow the resonance of those syllables to bring your attention to the space in consciousness, the space inside the field of your mind that arises at the end of I am. Let the I am awareness just keep bringing your mind back to that space and see if you can let the space be present and even have the sense that you're sinking into the space so that I am is no longer a carefully articulated and repeated thought. It's more of a energetic pointer towards the space at the end of I am. And here's the tricky part. As you focus on it, see if you can let yourself slip into it and be it, so that that space of the inner mind is not something that you're looking at or that you're making into an object. But that you actually allow yourself to be that presence. That presence which has the quality of beingness, because that space at the end of I am is actually a space of being, and which also has the quality of knowing. And the more you can allow yourself to slip into that, not forcing, not trying too hard, but more like slipping easily into a pool or a pond or a lake. Just let yourself slip into that openness of consciousness, that beingness, also aware. Whatever name we give it cannot describe the felt sense of that presence. The great Tibetan teacher Padmasambhava says, however many names may be applied to it, even though they are well conceived and elegant sounding, with regard to its real meaning, it is just this immediate present awareness and nothing else. This immediate present awareness. Aha. Let yourself be that. As Ramana Maharshi says, there is no greater mystery than this, that we keep seeking reality, though in fact we are reality. We think that there is something hiding reality and that this must be destroyed before reality is gained. A day will dawn when you will laugh at all your past efforts. That which will be on the day you laugh is also here and now. And is that immediate present awareness? So any fraction of a second that we recognize that is, of course, a fraction of a second or a moment or a week or a day of enlightenment. And then what seems to happen is that, you know, that force that we call, for want of a better word, the force of karma, brings us back to our ordinary state. Thoughts arise and we identify with them. Ideas arise, emotions arise especially. And what happens then is that we fall out of that place where the background awareness is in the foreground and where, as it expands, there's a natural sense of unity. And we fall into our ordinary experience, which is the experience of the dwandas, or the pairs of opposites. The fact that in one moment we're feeling like we're in a meditative state, and the next moment we're feeling like we're agitated. And peacefulness and agitation are experienced as opposites, just as pleasant and unpleasant are experienced as opposites, just as happy and sad are experienced as opposites. And part of the practice of anchoring yourself in enlightened awareness is actually learning how to equalize the pairs of opposites. You know, the sages of the old classical yoga traditions have done a lot of work trying to, so to speak, get beyond the opposites. Sometimes by sitting in blazing heat or bitter cold, and, you know, just trying to take their consciousness out of the body so that they can experience their freedom from it. But there's actually a series of methods that are much more immediate and actually helpful and much more soft for allowing ourselves to recognize the place beyond the opposites. And once we've started to tune into the inner mind, to the space of presence, then this kind of practice actually allows us to recognize this unity beyond the opposites. You know, in yoga, I feel compelled to say this. This is for those of you who haven't fallen into a meditative state from which you are unable to emerge, which I know often happens in my classes. You just go into meditation and you kind of wake up with the final gong, and that's fine. It's why we have the MP3, among other reasons. But one of the very beautiful recognitions of yoga that sort of, subtly physicalizes the concept of unity and opposites is the understanding about the Sushumna Nadi, which Karen LeDuc wrote about on the listserv this week. The Sushumna Nadi being a channel, a kind of tube that runs up the center of the body from the base of the spine up to the crown. And in the yogic tradition, the Sushumna Nadi is like a pillar, almost like a barber pole, that has two other channels running alongside it, entwining it, kind of like the serpents on the caduceus in the old image of the doctor's staff or of the staff of Hermes, the Greek god. And these two nadis, the ones that intertwine themselves around the Sushumna, are called the Ida and Pingala nadis. And in the yogic practice of meditation, when we go into deep yogic meditation, our prana, our breath, which normally moves through these two channels, the Ida and Pingala nadis, begins to move into the central channel. And then, as Karen was describing, it's as if our consciousness just opens up. The Sushumna Nadi is this tiny little slender thread of consciousness in the middle of the inner body. But when our awareness begins to enter it, begins to fall into it, it reveals that it's actually vast. It's, you know, it's sort of like Alice down the rabbit hole. You move into the Sushumna Nadi and suddenly your inner world expands in all sorts of interesting ways. And that's, the Sushumna Nadi is actually one of the doorways, the doorway of prana, one of the doorways that we can, through which we can enter into this place that we were entering into in the space at the end of I Am. One of the real secrets of entering into enlightened states is finding these places in the center of experience, whether it's in the center of the body as the subtle inner spine, or whether it's the center between one thought and another, or the space between one breath and another. Nearly every meditation practice in the traditions that tune us into the self as the underlying energy, the underlying power, the underlying awareness, work in one way or another with the center, with finding the space and entering the space. So that's what we're going to do in the next few minutes with emotions. And I'm offering you this practice partly because it's kind of surprisingly effective as a way of tuning into the space, but also because it's a really good way of working with emotions. In fact, it's a practice that you actually can do as a training if you tend to be tossed aside by emotions, tossed around by emotions. So you might like to stand and stretch just for a moment. And as you return to your seat, again, find yourself a posture. If you've been sitting all along, you might want to refresh your posture, breathing in and letting the sitting bones, hips and thighs ground, exhaling and allowing the body to rise up through the spinal column. Focusing for a moment on the breath. And just considering how our daily experience, our moment-to-moment experience, is so concerned with the way we hold opposing emotions or feelings. Because the nature of duality is that some experiences we find pleasant, other experiences we find unpleasant, you know, whatever the nature of the unpleasantness is. And because certain emotions, fear, sadness, anger, disturb our equilibrium, and even positive emotions, such as excitement or intense joy, or for example, the strong feeling of love that's not immediately able to express itself, these also disturb our equilibrium. And what I would say that's really important to understand is that part of the reason why so-called pleasant emotions like joy, love, compassion, gratitude feel good to us is because they are actually flavors of essence. They're actually flavors of our inner self. They're the emotional resonance of our inner self. But ironically, if we only allow ourselves to welcome the emotions that feel good and try to push away the emotions that don't feel so good, we endlessly find ourselves locked into the opposite. Some things are acceptable, some things are not. So actually it's why one of the great practices for returning to presence in all the non-dual traditions is to find a way to welcome or hold that in us which doesn't feel so pleasant. Pema Chodron, Pema Chodron's teacher, Chogyam Trungpa, used to say it's you invite the demons to take tea with you. And Jean Klein, the Advaita teacher who is the teacher of many of the contemporary teachers of non-dual practice, used to offer this practice that I offer also, called welcoming whatever arises. It's one of the great ways for tuning into presence. So we're going to use our imagination now to produce opposite states, and we're going to practice moving between the opposite states until this shift happens, which I'm not going to tell you what it is, but some of you know, that will allow you to see what's going on behind these oppositions. You know, in other words, we're going to use oppositions and different types of emotional feelings to help us kind of jump or be opened into the state of presence. So you're in a posture that's comfortable and easeful. You could actually do this practice in Shavasana, so you could, if that's more comfortable for you, you can lie down. bring your awareness to the breath. And let yourself be present with the breath, feeling being that you're being breathed. Now, with all your focus and with the power of your imagination, summon into your awareness the experience of feeling powerful, strong, and competent. And you might do this by remembering the last time you felt really powerful, strong, or competent, which might have been today. And just feel how that feels inside your body. Powerful, open, alive, dynamic, competent. How does your body feel when you have the feeling that you are powerful, alive, dynamic, competent? Sense how your heart feels, what happens in your posture, what happens to your mind. Just feel that. And now, quickly, quickly, summon up the feeling of being powerless, weak, depressed. Just let yourself bring that feeling into your body. It's okay. I promise you won't get stuck there. The feeling of being powerless, weak, and depressed. In whatever form you have experienced it, bring that into your body. Your neurons know how to remember both of these states. And let yourself be that, noticing how you identify with it in this moment. Now, switch to the feeling of being strong, powerful, alive, dynamic. The feeling of your being in your power, being in your dynamism. Feel it through your body. Now back to feeling powerless, weak, and depressed. Now back to feeling powerful, strong, and dynamic. And back to feeling weak, powerless, and depressed. Powerful, strong, and dynamic. Weak, powerless, and depressed. And see if you can notice what starts to happen as you move back and forth between these states. Open your eyes. And in a moment, I'm going to ask you to unmute yourself, which you can do by pressing *7. And maybe some of you can tell us what happens as you do that back and forth practice. Does something shift? And if so, what? And what does it have to do with your sense of being in presence? So I just switched air mode, so if anyone would like to say something, you can press star 7 and you can be heard. Hello? Star 7. And I'm actually dying to hear what people were experiencing. So as you bring yourself out of meditation, pretty sure you can be heard, so tell us your name. Star 7.
You hear me?
Yes.
I pressed star 6.
Oh, dear. Oh, you pressed star 6?
I pressed star 6, and I was hearing a lot of, it wasn't, kind of weird sounds on the phone, and I imagine other people have too, but I just decided to press star 6. Because,
oh, okay.
You know,
and it worked.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So she just gave
I wasn't
you...
going to... Otherwise, but I will say that at the very end, what was your question? You asked... Well,
What actually happened
in the sitting at the very end was that there was no difference.
Right. That's kind of what happens to me. And what would you say, if you want to say, if there was a takeaway from that, what would you say it might be?
What I am.
Yeah. This kind of
awareness.
Yeah.
There just wasn't a difference.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
And if someone else would like to follow her lead and press star 6. Hello.
This is Jean.
Hi, Jean.
Hi, Sally. What I'm finding that I'm doing when I'm doing your courses is that because I get too spacey when I do the meditation with you, is that I'm writing things down,
mm-hmm.
and I want to do this later on tonight after I teach.
Uh-huh.
But what I'm sharing with you, I wanted to respond, is that as I'm writing this down, I'm still putting myself through the emotions. And
right.
While the intelligent part of me is saying, okay, well, basically there is no difference, I'm having anxiety.
And like you're having it now?
I'm having anxiety, like I kind of don't want to do this.
Right.
And because while I know that the truth is that there is no difference, to put myself in the two extremes and to put myself through just to make the commitment to go to both directions so extreme,
mm-hmm.
back and forth, and it's like I'm going, I am feeling anxiety about getting lost.
Right. Thank you for asking that question. I wanted to address it.
Okay.
So thank you very much, Jean. And
I know this will come up tonight when I do it on my own.
Okay. That's great. One of the things about doing it with us, and if you have to teach in half an hour, of course, that you, I can understand that you wouldn't want to fully get into it. But one of the things about doing it with us is that there is a container that's present here on the call, and that also I've found and many people find is present when you do it by yourself. So what my guru used to say was, don't worry, if you get lost, I'll find you. And isn't that great? And my experience is that presence, that guru presence, is there in the atmosphere that surrounds this sangham. So I would say I totally understand the feeling of anxiety. It's an aspect of the resistance that we have to tuning in to negative states, basically. Most of us have had so much experience of negative states arising spontaneously that we don't want to call them forth. You know, it's like...
Forgive me for interjecting, but almost the resistance of going back to the positive.
Or the resistance of going back to the positive. So, absolutely true. You know, one of our greatest resistances, as Marianne Williamson always says, is to actually feeling our way into our enlightened state, our greatness. So, part of what we can do for ourselves is to just say, all right, you know, I'm going to welcome both of these without any expectations. And this is where the process of welcoming is so helpful. You know, you just say, okay, I'm willing to use my imagination to feel my vastness, my fullness, you know, to give myself the time to create that experience for myself, which you're all invited to do at this moment if you like, and to welcome it, you know, just to have this very conscious feeling of making a welcoming space for this alive, dynamic, powerful aspect of your consciousness. And, you know, and knowing that by welcoming it, and this is really important, by welcoming it, you are neutralizing its power to throw you for a loop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the sort of amazing power of, you know, a positive regard. It's like you. So then the feeling of anxiety, welcome that also.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the liberating piece of it. You know, okay, resistance, welcome it. Anxiety, welcome it. Boredom, welcome it. You know, this isn't going to work, welcome it. I've done this before, welcome it. All those things.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for asking the question. And I would just like to say to anyone who's having that experience or who's having an experience of feeling the negative state a little bit more present than you would like, welcome it.
Okay.
And notice what happens when you welcome it. Because the welcoming, again, this is one of those profound non-dual truths that always never ceases to amaze me. When you welcome it, what is doing the welcoming, especially when what you're welcoming is something that you normally are afraid of or try to push away, the part of you that's doing the welcoming is awareness itself. So in welcoming, even if you're doing it kind of mechanically,
mm-hmm.
Is what I'm saying true? Do you feel that it sort of opens up?
It gives me courage.
Yeah.
And it gives
beautiful.
Me
beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. Well,
so,
fantastic.
And I feel like I had no resources, so now I feel like I have a tool. So.
Fantastic. That's exactly, that's beautiful. And that's actually my hope for these practices, is that exactly that they become resources, that they become tools, so that you can, in your exploration, you actually feel like you're accompanied by something that's within your power. that opens you up to, you know, to your deepest resources. So again, thank you for asking. And
I'm not remembering. How do I get out? Star 7?
I think you do. I think star 6. Or so if that doesn't work, try star 7.
Okay.
That sounds like it worked. So do we have one more person who'd like to share? Hello? Okay. We have just a few more minutes left in the call, and we're going to, unless somebody wants to get our attention in the next 30 seconds, we're going to move back into a meditative place and meditative state. So take your comfortable upright posture. And this time, as you ground yourself through the hips and thighs and buttocks, have the feeling also that you're sending rays of intention down into the earth. In the martial arts tradition, they say, imagine that your base of your spinal column is a tail, and that it's kind of like the tail of a kangaroo. And it's sinking into the earth and grounding you, holding you to the earth. And feel that your spinal column, in your spinal column, the energy moves upward, not only lifting your body, but rising up through the crown and connecting you to the sky, to the sun, to the Milky Way if it's dark. And today is the solstice, so it may even be light on the East Coast. I'm kind of amazed by the fact that we get to do this practice together on the solstice, which is such an auspicious time, such a powerful day, one of the powerful days of the year. And in the spirit of the solstice, we're going to invoke the fullness of presence rather than the emptiness or neutrality of presence. We're going to tune into the intrinsic love energy, the bliss energy of the universe. One of the qualities of essence of self, of course, as we all know, is love. And the love of the essence is not, it's not the love that we necessarily feel directed towards another person, although the love that we direct towards others and ourselves can be a great doorway into that intrinsic quality of love. Love is the recognition of the intrinsic holding energy of the universe, the fact that reality is fundamentally positive. The nature of reality, this is one of those things that, you know, especially these days in New Age circles, we hear this a lot, but it's a very different thing to hear it and to just grasp this, the nature of the universe as love, as pure, melting, loving, holding, embracive, utterly, not even unconditional, intrinsic, essential love, that the cosmos, beingness itself, is the heart of reality. Love is the heart of reality. So the truth is that even though reality has its patterns and its ways of being, these patterns are patterns of the heart. This quality of heartfulness is inherent every particle of the universe. So love is not a feeling of love. It's the quality of existence that makes existence lovable, that makes us want to be alive. Love is the quality in existence that makes existence lovable. And that quality of lovingness and lovability in reality is what it is that's bringing in your breath and dancing in your bloodstream and beating as your heart. And if you can think of this love as having both the quality of nurturing, let's say, mother-father love, you know, the love that you might have for a child or someone very, very dear to you, and to also, that this love also has the quality of passion, the quality that you may have felt at some time in your life or perhaps even now for someone or something which you intensely, lovingly desired. In other words, the love of kind of pure, unconditional presence and the love of passionate, urgent desire. The love that most often in the human realm expresses itself as sexuality, but which in the cosmos expresses itself as the intense passion for life. And as you sit and as you allow the breath to flow into you and through you, and as you allow the sound of I am to express itself, just to speak to you from inside, feel that this love, which is both utterly gentle and nurturing, and at the same time passionate with the desire to open you to itself, is flowing into you with the breath. See if you can allow yourself to be opened by the love of the universe. As though, to personalize it, as though God, cosmos, universe, source, pouring so much love and intention into you, all you have to do is receive it. And you can have the feeling of opening your pores, opening your chest, opening your crown chakra, opening your mouth, almost as though the love of the universe is pouring into your mouth, pouring into your heart, pouring in through your pores. Just open and let it pour in. Let yourself just open. Let yourself be opened. Let yourself just be utterly receptive. Let the urgency and the nurturing holding quality of love pour itself into you. And recognize that that love is not different than you. That love is you. Have a beautiful, beautiful evening, day, week. Don't forget to write into the listserv and you'll be receiving your homework later today or later tonight or very early in the morning. And I send you huge blessings, huge love. It's been a joy to be with you tonight. Namaste.